I'm Celeste Headley. This is On Second Thought. On this day, 35 years ago, the man suspected of carrying out one of the most grisly crimes in American history was arrested.
In Atlanta, murder charges were filed today against 23-year-old Wayne Williams for the most recent death in a string of 28 murders of young blacks over the past 2 years.
Wayne Williams was the prime suspect in the disappearance and murder of 23 black children in Atlanta over a 2-year period. The incident is known as the Atlanta Child Murders. Williams is serving a life sentence in prison for other murders, but he's always maintained his innocence of the child murders. Here he is in an interview with CNN where he was asked about why he called young black kids, quote, drop shots.
That does not make me a murderer simply because I said somebody is a drop shot or because I called him a drop shot. That does not make Wayne Williams a murderer because I say somebody is a street urchin. You know, come on, we're talking about murder. The fact is, I didn't kill anybody.
I talked about the Atlanta child murders on this show in April. My guest was Ginny Neighbors, whose play Serial Blackface is about the murders. I also spoke with author Tayari Jones. Her novel Leaving Atlanta is told through the perspective of several children whose peers went missing. And reporter Dale Russell of Fox 5 Atlanta joined us to look back on the murders, which he covered. I started off asking him why there's still debate over the number of victims.
That's a difficult topic just right there. It was a 2.5-year long string of murders in the city of Atlanta that began with young teenage black boys and over time slowly evolved into older young adults. But it was a city that was gripped with fear at the time. I can tell you that. It was just astonishing for the press corps, for the government, for the police. Nobody had seen anything like this. Because you have to remember, this was a point in time where there was no Silence of the Lamb. There were no FBI profilers. The community didn't really know a lot about serial killers.
Right.
And all of a sudden, we had children ripped from our streets that were dying. In the beginning, the first two bodies were found together 100 yards apart from each other in 1979. To the end of the string of murders, that was literally a child or an older young adult being killed almost once a week. So imagine that. Mm-hmm. Once a week, a young man has lost his life, and the city was turned upside down.
And Janine, this becomes fertile ground for you dramatically, at least. Which part of the Atlanta child murders did you want to investigate through art?
Well, for me, I was always interested in the story of the mother. When I was looking at the research, when I was doing my research the year and a half before I started writing the play, I saw that one of the victims had never been found. His body was never found. And for me, that was kind of the catalyst for Vivian, the mother in my play, for Serial Blackface, because she is so restless with her need to try to find her son, but also the discomfort that she has remaining with her daughter. And that was my way into the play, the child that was never found.
And Tayari, you had a similar but distinct approach through your novel, Leaving Atlanta, which is that you tried to imagine what it was like for kids here, not just their families, but the kids specifically who were afraid to be alone, to be walking through the streets of Atlanta. Why, Tayari, do the Atlanta child murders that took place so long ago, why do they still have such an impact?
It's funny. You said I had to imagine what it was like for the children. Actually, I didn't have to imagine. I grew up in Atlanta in 1979. I was 9 years old, and two of the children who were abducted were students in my elementary school. So for me, this was really me writing, my coming-of-age story. My way of looking at the murders was I was curious as to how these murders issued my generation into our adolescence, because we were 9, 10 years old. We were right at the cusp. And what did that teach us about the world, and how has that made us the people we are today?
So, Dale, you spoke with a number of families and people in Atlanta while you were covering this, and even after Wayne Williams went to prison. What kind of things were people telling you?
It was terrifying for these families. I can remember one case where there was a child missing. We all went to the home. I went to the home originally. I was there by myself. Then some other reporters heard about the case. And all of a sudden, there were 4 or 5 reporters on the porch waiting with a mother to find out whether or not her child was going to be returned or found dead. And just sitting in her home talking with her, I can remember it vividly even to this day, how emotionally draining it was for this mother of a young child. And in her case, the child was found, and he was returned, and it was a glorious ending to it. But I can remember sitting on that porch thinking how devastating this was for the families to have these children just disappear, sometimes in the middle of mostly in the middle of the day. In fact, it wasn't somebody coming in at night. These children were just swept off the streets, going about their normal daily routines.
At times when they thought they were safe. So, Janine, what kind of research did you have to do to get into the minds of people during this time?
Well, I have family that lives in Atlanta, and my brother and sister were both very much, you know, in school at the time of the Atlanta child murders. So I spoke to my family in Atlanta first. Then I went through my parents and my brothers. I read a lot of research online, and when I actually started writing the play, a lot of people, I was a student at Juilliard, and a lot of people were talking me out of writing it because they were like, well, why is it relevant now? I mean, this thing happened so many years ago. And at that time, Trayvon Martin happened. And that was kind of the catalyst that really lit a fire underneath me to kind of continue with this story, because I do think that Black Lives Matter is very much kind of like the same type of thing that's happening back then.
You mean this feeling? Like, yeah, this feeling that African American kids particularly have that they're not safe, which is interesting because we got a tweet from April B, who says, "As a kid, it was difficult to process the racial component of the killings. I simply didn't feel the same threat as my classmates." And Tayari, how do we process? Wayne Williams is African American. How do we process the racial component of this? And especially for you, growing up feeling like you, in particular, because of the color of your skin, are less safe than your friends.
You know, the thing about it is that children do not understand themselves as historical. This is why the child murders, I believe, was actually more traumatic for our parents. Like, when the murders started happening, this is just after civil rights, our parents look at the murders and they think lynching, right? They have this historical understanding. But as children, we saw it as classmates. Like, as a child, we didn't process it in the same racial way. I mean, that in many ways was kind of the way it was our coming of age. But I think that the piece that I really think we must talk about is that this was a case that also introduced the idea of socioeconomic class in the African American community. Keep in mind that in the early 80s in Atlanta, we had Black mayor, Black police chief. You know, when my father moved here to Atlanta, you know, the idea was that they had Black everything. It was supposed to be the Black Mecca, that we had a Black dog catcher. Everybody was Black. And so part of the conflict that emerged was that the mothers felt marginalized because they were not of Atlanta's Black bourgeois elite. Mm. And this was really the first time that the city, in a big public way, had to grapple with the idea that just the word Black didn't say everything that was happening.
We would love to hear from those of you listening. If you lived in Atlanta during that 2-year child murder episode, what do you remember about that time? Tweet us at OST Talk, or you can join the conversation on Facebook. Lil Mike SF tweets, "I was a kid and very creeped out by the news, but not old enough to understand the truly toxic implications." And he tagged you in that tweet, Tayari. April B says, "It was a scary time. I was in the 5th grade when the killing started. My dad gave us green ribbons to wear to honor the victims." And Meg Donahue tweets, "My family moved down from Boston in 1982. The only thing my mother knew about Atlanta was Gone with the Wind and these murders. Suffice it to say, she wasn't thrilled about moving to Georgia." And we heard from Michelle Ryder Kosiba. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Michelle, on Facebook. She says, "I remember I was a preteen, and I was scared and sad. The reality of never seeing your child or a child never to see their parents again really hit the heart." We're speaking about the long-term impacts of Atlanta child murders. My guests are playwright Janine Nabors, author Tayari Jones, and Fox 5 Atlanta reporter Dale Russell. Dale, there is still to this day argument over whether Wayne Williams is responsible for these murders. Why is it not settled?
I think for several reasons. One, there was always there was a certain group of reporters and activists and parents that just never could accept Wayne Williams as the killer from the get-go. He was you would have to know Wayne. He was a very unassuming young man in many ways. He was he wasn't terrifying looking. He wasn't scary looking. He looked sort of meek and mild. So he didn't fit the picture that we all were developing in our minds
of
who
was
this gruesome monster that are killing the children. He was also, and I think Tierra just said it perfectly, he was the child of two school teachers. So he was sort of in the middle class, upper middle class of the community. Nobody expected the killer to be this guy. I mean, he just didn't fit the image. And there was absolutely a racial component to it, that there were a lot of people that were never going to accept that the killer was black, and there were a lot of people that were never going to accept, frankly, that if the killer were white. So it was sort of a torn community, if you will. And as the murders were unfolding over a 2.5-year period, nobody knew what we were going to find at the end of it. And then his trial alone was very confusing for a lot of people because he was actually convicted for killing two young adults, a 27-year-old and 21-year-old, Nathaniel Cato and Jimmy Ray Payne.
Yeah.
But what a lot of people don't know is during that trial was evidence introduced against 10 other victims, 9 of whom were children. And the trial, the child murder trial, really took place within the confines of that trial of two murder victims in their 20s. We heard evidence of 10 other murders, 9 of whom were children. That was truly the story of that 2.5-year period if you sat through the entire trial.
Janine, does Wayne Williams' guilt or not or innocence matter dramatically when we're writing this play?
I think because so many people that I had spoken with were conflicted with whether they thought he was guilty or innocent. I decided to kind of take that out of the play and just focus on the remainder, like what was happening with the mother and the daughter and the trauma. But I did want to put danger on stage. So for me, the man with the face is a representation of the danger that can come into your home when you're, you know, not around your children, and what happens when you, this idea of like not knowing that black people were dangerous. You know, I think there was a time where these people were very much about their home life and looking at each other for community. And so what this play does is kind of show the breakdown of community.
And Tayari, this is something that you alluded to earlier. There were a number of other theories about who was responsible. People thought the KKK were committing these crimes. That was thought for a very long time. And I wanted you to respond to Janine's idea that for many African American kids, especially, it was other African Americans that were supposed to be safe. They were supposed to be the people you turned to.
And I think they still are and still were. I mean, I do think that I do think there was a sense that African Americans were not serial killers, which is very different than saying that African Americans thought African Americans were harmless, right? Even in my book, in my novel Leaving Atlanta, the kids are theorizing and the kids are like repeating their parents saying, I get how somebody might cut you over there, woman, but this is different. So it wasn't as though we were strangers to violence, but the idea that this kind of perverse, motiveless crime, I wasn't interested dramatically in whodunit because I think that when you structure a story around finding the killer, the protagonist becomes the police, and you end up making a work of art in service of the state. I did not want
That's
to write
true.
A novel where the main character is the state. I was very interested in the ways that the community adapted and in many ways came together. Because, you know, if you think about it, remember the Committee to Stop the Children's Murders, the Mother's Organization? And they were like a kind of lay woman's children's defense fund. That came about because of the murders. So in many ways, community came together as well.
I wanted to read an email I got from Kathy Lohr, a journalist who reminds us of Karen Slaughter, who's a best-selling crime novelist, grew up in Atlanta. Karen Slaughter is white. Kathy Lohr says this, the murders led to her interest in crime. There was so much fear, she said. She couldn't go out and play or ride bikes. Kids were missing. Nobody knew what was going on and why. It was real fear to people who lived here, and especially because when these kids grew up in this environment. And that would be the standing question, Dale, is how long will this impact go on? Is this a generational thing, or is this a fear people might pass on?
You know, it's interesting. I actually think that when I talk to young journalists that are coming into Atlanta, they don't know anything about this. Mm-hmm. They've heard something randomly about some children. They don't know the horror that this city went through. I think arguably the most traumatic historical crime event in the city's history. I think a lot of people have forgotten it. It doesn't resonate mm-hmm. today like it did back then. That's what I think is so great when a playwright sits down, when an author sits down and writes a novel or a play about that time, because they can get into the story, as you've heard both authors say, that they can get into a story in a way that just a factual recitation, a Wikipedia,
or a documentary,
of the story just can't. And so I think it's tremendous that we have people that look at that period of time, see how incredibly dramatic it was. It is a story of crime, of race, of class. There's so much that was going on in the city at the time. And I've read the play and I've read the book, and I can tell you, I think they both have done a very good job of capturing the feeling of the city at that point in time.
That is Dale Russell. He's a senior IT reporter at Fox 5 Atlanta. We spoke with Terry Jones, author of Leaving Atlanta, and Ginny Neighbors, whose play Serial Blackface is about the murders. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.